This is Robert Cappuccio. Welcome to the Self-Help Antidote, a weekly dose of reason, perspective, and insight, where we challenge conventional thinking and explore authentic strategies and insights around personal transformation. Our commitment to you is to bring you some of the world's leading experts in the domains of fitness, wellness, coaching, and behavior change, separating fact from fallacy. The word triggered is becoming increasingly common in our everyday conversations. In some cases, it's a derogatory way to describe someone who's overly sensitive. And while you kind of have to admit that some people spend their lives eagerly awaiting the perfect opportunity to be offended, in reality, there are many reasons why an individual would have a strong, emotionally upsetting reaction to something that they perceive to be threatening in their environment. They could be overwhelmed in the moment, which lowers their reaction threshold. Maybe they're feeling alone or particularly vulnerable. Maybe they perceive any difference in opinion as a threat to their identity, or they might be confronted with something that triggers an intense emotional response because they associate it with serious trauma that they've endured in the past. My guest in this episode, however, has a unique take on triggers, what they mean, and how the things that quote-unquote trigger us can actually help us to grow over time if we have the willingness and strategies to manage them. Joanne Groves is a presenter, educator, and author with Faster Function. She has over 20 years experience in the fitness industry, helping others to educate themselves, keep moving, and asking the right questions to discover what's right for them, rather than being dependent on a guru. Equally important, she has a really quick wit, and she's a lot of fun. Enjoy the episode. Jo Groves, welcome to the Self-Help Antidote.
Thank you very much, Bobby. How are you?
I'm okay. I don't have my blurred screen like you do. And it's pissing me off, actually. I want my blur button. I pay my Zoom fees just like everybody else. I love the blurred background.
Did it trigger you?
It triggered me. I'm triggered by the fact that you're not blurry. Your background's blurry, which makes you look even clearer, and I can't blur my background. Now, this is audio, so nobody knows what I'm going on about. But yeah, so today we're going to talk about triggers. And obviously, I'm already triggered by my lack of background choices. How's that? Do I sound better?
That sounds good. Nice and clear.
It's a very nice mic. Because I'm constantly ranting. This is like a rant podcast. So when we talk about triggers, what's your perspective? This is something that you wanted to talk about. And obviously we live in an age where, I don't know, people like desperately seek the opportunity to be triggered at times.
I'll try and help them out. I mean, I don't know what will help other people. I know what's helped me. So I can kind of share some of those things that I've learned along the way. I've heard a lot of people talking about triggers, and it's almost become quite negative. So I think, first of all, we probably need to define what a trigger is. And that's really the information, the stimulus that we're given. And when it becomes important enough to us, it crosses a threshold. We get an emotional reaction. We get a hormonal change. We get both. And we have an emotion.
You're not talking about a trigger as a negative or a positive thing. It could be either, but it's basically an environmental cue that crosses a threshold based on its relevance and initiates a level of responsiveness in somebody.
Absolutely. So something becomes important enough for us, which is a good thing, because that's emotion. That's a compelling reason to move, either because there's an opportunity, food, or there's a threat, get away, freeze, fight, or flight. But what we also need to recognize is before we take that action that is going to reinforce that feeling and then ultimately the experiences that we're getting, we can actually check in and we can pause and wait and we can help our cognition and go, okay, so I just read this post. This is something that triggers me. And I'm like feeling, no, this is not good, or whatever it is. And then if I can actually stop and take a moment and think, am I angry? And if I am angry, what kind of angry? You know, what flavor of angry am I? There's 50 shades of anger. And I'll start to write that down. And
that book does not sound like it's going to be as good of a bestseller as 50 Shades of Grey. 50 Shades of Anger. But I mean, yeah.
But once I've gone through that process, it's kind of taken me out of that moment of anger anyway. And so now I'm being more specific about what I'm feeling. So emotional granularity, I'm just kind of going fine grading, what is it? And then by the fact of doing that, I'm actually now thinking and taking that moment. So I'm sure lots of people that are listening to this have read Chimp Management. That was a great book that helped me stop reacting on that initial impulse.
I was involved in Chimp Management for years. They're very unruly, very hard to manage. They make a mess out of the office. Like, no matter how many pep talks you give them, it's just that it's very hard for them to get their shit together. They throw their shit at each other, actually, in the middle of the board meetings. It's horrible. I don't recommend it.
No. Yeah. You know, these chimps can go wild.
What you're saying, can I just want to stop you and break this down, because this is brilliant. You've laid out an entire coaching process here, because you say rather than looking at being triggered as a bad thing, it's actually a vehicle to self-awareness, which is the key to the lock on all transformation, where, okay, I'm feeling something right now. And first of all, what am I feeling? Because a lot of times when we identify a feeling, it's structured around vague ambiguities rather than meaningful specifics. I'm angry. Well, nobody's ever just angry. I'm sad. I'm afraid. No. I'm feeling disturbed. I'm feeling betrayed. I'm feeling outraged. I'm feeling disgusted. Like, what specifically are you feeling? That's called affect labeling. And when you do that, it instantly lowers the intensity of that emotion in the brain. It's something very simple that you can do to get yourself out of a non-constructive state. And then what you're saying is start to ask questions, which creates a gap between stimulus and response, kind of upregulates your prefrontal lobes. So now you could start thinking through, okay, what is this environmental cue or quote unquote trigger trying to tell me? What is it trying to tell me about what I consider to be important? What principles are at stake here? What my values are? Or what needs do I have in my life that might be going unmet that this environmental cue is bringing to my attention? Like, as I break down everything you're saying, it's brilliant, actually. I usually don't make a habit of complimenting my guests. I don't want them to be all big about themselves. And so keep it in check.
Right. Okay. I'll try.
All right. Yeah. Good. Yeah. That's brilliant. I knew you were going to have some good stuff. Like I saw like your headset, I was like, all right,
it's a nice headset, isn't it? Yeah.
Like, she is not fucking around with this. I feel bad for our listeners because they cannot see like the professionalism of your headset. Anyway, carry on. Sorry.
Well, yeah. So we kind of getting back to what you were saying there. I 100% agree that, you know, we have an opportunity as a coach, as a fitness professional, as a friend, as a person to go, what is it? Is this a story that I'm telling myself? Is this based on a perception? It's all based on a perception, because it's all in our mind on how we're seeing it, you know, the influences that we've had in our past, all of these things. And we're thinking right now we have an opportunity of taking an action that will reinforce this. And will this reinforcement be a positive? Will this reinforcement help? Will it be constructive? And so to me, it is really important because, as I mentioned, I used to get myself involved in a few little tiffs online.
I did
a little bit because I'm really passionate about what I do. And I like to get involved, ask questions, you know, really get the bottom of things. And what I discovered is that certainly as a female in the industry, I would be greeted with a lot of hostility just because I may have had a different opinion. The audacity. Who is this woman that dare speak amongst men? It wasn't just men. It's women as well. So, who dare speak up? And so, as I mentioned, you know, I would have this trigger, and it was important enough for me to do something which was normally sort of sharpen my fingernails and get straight onto Facebook. And then when I put this strategy into place where I would write down what I was feeling, why I was feeling that, why did I feel threatened or whatever it was. And that process helped me to do something more constructive with that, whether that was to go away and write an article myself or a blog that would be more helpful to other people. One of the things that it did was to inspire me to set up female personal trainers to give other females who perhaps weren't as feisty as I was, and, you know, loud and willing to be called a snowflake online, to give them the opportunity to be able to debate and have that voice and be heard. And so that was a constructive way of using it.
Well, to be fair, there are professional wrestlers that are not as feisty as you are, Joe. But again, unpacking what you're saying, you would ask yourself again, like, why am I feeling the way I'm feeling? And go away and write, not necessarily respond to the person, but craft a response. And then you could sit on that and go, do I really want to send this? But this whole exercise is you're using a heightened emotional state to clarify your own thought processes. Another thing that I want to take you back to is you're like, well, I'm passionate. And that's something to keep in mind is when I get triggered, which is often, and when I have the presence of mind, mostly, you know, I've got Tourette's and a low trigger threshold. But what I step back and do is, so is this true? Because I'm viewing the conversation from my filter of reality. And my filter of reality is not the filter of reality. The world and other people's world sometimes are bigger than my own biased perception. And the first step in alleviating your biases is acknowledging that everybody has biases. And the greater the level of expertise you have, the greater level of commitment, experience, and passion you have, the deeper and wider those biases are likely to go. So that extraordinary level of self-awareness there, again.
I was just going to say, bringing it back to me for a moment, I'm full of biases. You know, I want everything to be about movement. I love movement. And so I have to sometimes take that out. You know, sometimes it's okay just to sit and watch Netflix, you know, but my bias is to get up there and move. This is one of the things that I run with John Hardy, who was my male mentor.
Really? John doesn't seem like much of a runner. I did beat him in a foot race, by the way. I just want to like bring this. If John, if you're listening to this, Loughborough, 10 years ago, I beat you in a foot race. It was only our foot. We didn't actually run anywhere.
Oh, I've heard about this.
It was just the foot, but yeah. I won. He beat me like 3 times in a row.
He was the person that was there to help me when I would get in these discussions, shall we say, online. And he gave me the confidence to be able to come back and, you know, debate with without getting into the playground.
How did he do that?
And well, he, you know, just said, what upsets you about being called a snowflake or a sweetheart, you know, and also acknowledging that he was going, really, I cannot believe that someone has said that to you, that, you know, and knowing that I would get some of the responses because of being a female. But anyway, so from that, we set up something called Digital Presenter. And this is going back to the point that you made. There is a point to this. And that is when we...
I never said a thing.
when we are passionate about something and we're moved by something, we get that what moment, that moment of that got me, that got to me, whether it got to us in a way that was, again, opportunity, or whether it was, it got to me, that's a threat. Do I fight, do I freeze, or do I flight? So one of the things that we do is we teach our students to write down everything that's moved them. And like you said, don't go and respond to it in that moment. We've all made that mistake of getting a text message or an email and then just firing it back. And then you think, oh, no, why did I send that?
I have no idea what you mean.
Sure. So from that point, you start to build a picture in your notebook, and this is private, you don't have to share this with anyone, but you start to build a picture of the things that mean something to you, and you can start to see what it is that you're reacting to, and that way you can use that to be more constructive. Because as I said, you know, some of these triggers are they're essential. You know, if it's a freeze, flight, or fright situation, you know, if your life depends on it, you need to be able to react fast on that. Whereas if it's just to get into an argument or one-upmanship, then it's probably not going to be so constructive. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's, I really like the look of that bar of chocolate, I'll go and eat it. You know, we've got to go, actually, I notice that every time I see green and blacks, I'm really tempted to eat it. And I've started to notice that for me, I get this emotion of, oh, quite like that. And then we can start to recognize,
never met a bar
am
of
I hungry?
Green and blacks I didn't like.
Oh, it's my favorite. I do like the butterscotch green and blacks, definitely.
I actually, I entered into a relationship. Like I've actually started two relationships, major ones, with green and blacks, either offering or having been offered green and blacks. Yeah, green and blacks has completely transformed my love life in a very positive way. Okay, wait. This is
now. Would you say that was a causation or a correlation?
No, causation, definitely.
Definitely a causation.
Rock up. She has green and blacks. Okay. I think she might be the one.
Okay, so anyway. If you want to date with Bobby, come in with Now, the other thing that, again, may not help anybody else, but certainly does help me is I try to speak to myself. Now, I know that might be considered, you know, not normal, but if I find that if I narrate to myself in the voice of Sarah Milligan, it stops me responding. So if somebody has annoyed me, you know, they've cut me up in the car, which how very dare they, you know, suddenly I go, Joe, are you really, Joe's really unhappy. That person just cut her up in the car. She wants to drag them out of the car and shovel their face into the sidewalk. That's a little bit extreme. And then all of a sudden it starts to take the heat out of the situation. And I realize, you know what, they're probably just rushing, or, you know, they've got something going on and I can take that out of my sail.
No, but when you use that narration, you use disassociation. It's not as much of an personal insult with that narrator, which is you, but another aspect of you, different from the one who's reacting to getting cut off. It's a brilliant strategy. And I love what you're saying about when we're triggered, do we engage in, and I'm thinking about a friend of mine's podcast, The Behavior Couple. My friend, Anna Marie Derillion, she's a behavioral analyst, and her and her husband were delineating between arguments and debates and discussions, where an argument, you're in it to win, but actually not so much to win, but to help the other person, make sure the other person loses. There's this malevolence, there's this maliciousness. Somebody's been wounded, where a debate, it's about winning. I'm going to win that debate, but I also respect the views and opinions of other people, and I'm trying to learn. And a discussion, it's not about winning or losing at all. It's about collaborative learning. Online, a lot of the things that you're getting triggered by are arguments. And it's very hard, if possible at all, in an argument to persuade somebody. But what you're saying is, well, I could still use that because it's not about that other person. It's about me taking an introspective dive to what is it in that argument that's making me react to this, and getting clearer and clearer on your perspective and how to articulate your perspective. So even if you never engage in the argument itself gives you value based on your response to it, but you don't actually have to engage in it. Am I hearing that correctly, or am I just...
Well, I was going to say to a point, and the point being that there, I had a trigger when you said argument. And I need to respond to that. But I'm going to check, first of all, whether the way I respond to it is what I want.
I think you're full of shit.
Yeah, what I was going to say was when you said getting into arguments, a lot of the time, maybe it was from my perspective, but I felt that I was in a debate. But what tends to happen is that I found that I was getting hostility back, and I was treated as though it wasn't a debate, that it was an argument.
Well, you might have been in a debate. The other person might have been in an argument.
Yeah.
Because it truly is about proving other people wrong sometimes. And it's like nobody wins in those scenarios, do they?
No. And that is really the key of trying to work out a more productive way of using what you feel. And that then can help you change the experiences that you're having, you know, and whether that is, you know, my brother had a car accident and he did his convalescing watching Neighbours and Home and Away. And for years later, he would experience pain when the theme tune to Neighbours came on and Home and Away, because it was an instant that reminded him of that moment. Mm-hmm. And when he was able to verbalize that and put, well, there's clearly no danger in watching Home and Away other than wasting 20 minutes of your time, then he was able to change the experience. So all of these things can help in so many different aspects. So although I've been using it within Digital Presenter and with myself, it's essential as a personal trainer to be aware that we're constantly getting this information. Is it hot? Is it cold? Is there a pressure on my skin? You know, all of those things. And then we have a trigger. And at that point, we get that stimulus that crosses over that threshold and we get that emotion.
It's very important to identify what I'm getting from this, because I just keep breaking this down because you're saying a lot of valuable stuff and I want to make sure the audience gets this. A lot of times, if we're not paying attention, we don't know what triggers us. And then we are completely susceptible to the psychological landmines in our environment. We don't know where they are. We don't know exactly why we're having the intensity of the reaction. I mean, we know generally, but we don't know specifically. And the more specific we are about where our triggers are, the more we can utilize them to help us gain clarity, or in some cases, the better we are at kind of avoiding them.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting one. Do you think we can avoid a trigger?
Probably. I know I have. I've learned about certain things.
Are you avoiding the trigger, or are you avoiding the action that you take to the trigger?
That's a really good question. For me, I will start to avoid posts that I know nothing constructive comes out of it. And
I know when I look at something, okay, this is probably something I should not engage in. I mean, you trigger me. I avoid you sometimes. That seems to work. not for very long, but it seems to work for a little while.
But the challenging part of that is particularly when you've got a client that, you know, perhaps wants to lose weight, if they're avoiding the trigger because they don't go into shops, at some point they're going to have to go into a shop and buy food.
Absolutely.
So
there are some times when you do not want to utilize avoidance as a strategy. Like, okay, if I'm practicing avoidance and then I'm now confronted in a situation where I can't avoid something, do I have the capacity, the tools, and the strategies? I completely get that. But where I'm coming from is when you know specifically where your triggers are, you can be a little bit more prepared. Number two, you can identify, how do I utilize this through the strategies that you laid out for us before? So you can employ the trigger towards growth. You can employ the trigger towards something constructive, but there are some times where it's like, you know what? I have a limited amount of focus and energy. This does not serve me. I'm not going to engage. I know where this landmine is. I'm not going to engage in it. And there are not a lot of consequences by me not engaging it. But when you know where these things are, you can make those discernments rather than just being in a state of response.
So really you're avoiding the stimulus. So you're not putting yourself in that situation to get triggered.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not going to work all the time. It's not appropriate or desirable all the time. But sometimes it just is.
Because that's the thing, we can't, we're constantly getting stimulus. Like right now, being locked up, not that I'm in prison. Just to clarify, if this is being watched years later from an asylum somewhere.
Live from the penitentiary, we have Joe Gross.
Now, here in the UK, we are...
Meeting time's over. She's being tried to wait, just one more point. I've got one more point. Sorry.
In lockdown with COVID currently, I think it is just a year and 1 week and 42 hours and 60 seconds that we've been in lockdown. And, you know,
good to see some you haven't people been said, paying too much attention.
I've been writing it on the board day one. No, you know, there are some great things, but people have been talking about, are we being triggered more in lockdown? But the triggers are the same, because the triggers are the information that we're given, that stimulus is happening all the time. But what happens is that we don't have as much maybe going outside to stimulate as stimulus. So I may not be getting triggered as much by people cutting me up in the car, but I'm getting triggered more by my 18-year-old leaving his dishes out that didn't bother me on day one, day two, day 49 of lockdown. But suddenly it starts to become a bigger deal to me. So
I resemble
it's changed.
That comment.
You resemble that. Have you had that?
Oh, we've had some interesting discussions. Anyway, this isn't all about me.
Well, you know, I know you have a dog, Orlando. You know, our dog, suddenly he's on the way more often because I'm here all the time. But it doesn't mean that I'm being triggered more often. I'm still getting all the stimulus, but it's just different. And I guess it's harder for people, you know, if they can't go and see a loved one or hug someone, you know, all of those things, then that's really powerful. That's really important. And so other things are making them cross that threshold and react to that. So if we can put strategies in place that help us just take a step back for a moment and think about what the other person is perhaps going through.
That is, I think that is a major lesson in all interpersonal dynamics and relationships. You're speaking to empathy. you know, if I was this other person, why would I feel the way they feel? Why would I believe what they're believing? Why would I react the way they're reacting? I mean, sometimes when people say things that seem absurd and ludicrous, we label them as either stupid or sometimes, oh, they're worse, they're evil. They're a threat to us. Are they? Like, do these people that, you know, just have a family going about their day, do they wake up and go, okay, today I'm going to be evil. Today I'm going to be a complete and utter moron. Their reality is just as real and sensible to them as yours is to you. And a lot of times asking what's the human need that is likely going unmet with this other person is just as valuable as saying, well, what basic human need is going unmet that my trigger is trying to illuminate for me? It's kind of like the same thing. What if this person feels unsafe because they feel marginalized, they feel ostracized? After a while, how are they going to respond? Because if there's one benefit to come out of this, and there might be multiple benefits to come out of this experience that we've been going through for a solid year now, it's how much we absolutely do need other people for our own mental health. You know, it's how much social interaction, not just superficially, but deeply in a meaningful way, impacts us. And it's created so much division when it's illuminated the need for so much cohesion.
Absolutely. I mean, this is why it's such an important topic. You know, it is behind everything. One of the courses that I also teach at MSAS, we're obviously helping trainers help their clients. So to discover what their goals are and really find out what's behind those goals, why those goals are important to them, their intrinsic motivation, their extrinsic motivation. But with that, you know, we're putting a client into a strange scenario. You know, we're using interviewing techniques, which basically come from interrogation. So we're putting them
like
in
what?
A stressful environment. Well obviously, I'm not saying cold water and slap. but you know, a lot of the questions, you know, it comes from, the research comes from interrogation. And we need,
you know,
to, as trainers.
That's, I always notice that whenever I would ask my clients precisely where they were on the evening of such and such a night, precisely at what time, they would get weirded out by it.
Yeah. Where were you at 5 o'clock? You had a PT appointment. You were supposed to be there.
Exactly. So on the evening of January 25th, when the cake suspiciously went missing, what were your exact whereabouts? And that could be an off-putting way to interact with a client. I understand that.
But where I'm kind of going with this is that if we're not aware ourselves of when we have a trigger and being able to take a moment, see it, acknowledge it, then we may miss that when we see it in a client. And it's really important that we are listening to them on such a deep level that we notice that trigger. We see the breath change. We see their spatial awareness change, their kinesthetic response.
Something shifted. You don't even have to know why.
Shifted.
You just have to know something has changed.
You won't know why. You know, I mean, like, if you think about being in a theater, the great thing about a theater is everyone is going through an emotional journey. And that has been set up by the clever writer and the production team. And they're there to trigger us. They're there to create that emotion. But what they can't guarantee is what we feel from that emotion. So you're sharing an experience in the theater like you would in a cinema, and everybody is going through the trigger, the emotion, and they're getting that stimulus, and they feel, But what we can't guarantee is that you are feeling the same as the person sat next to you. But as a trainer, we need to know that our client felt something, and we need to know what it was.
Do you know who Dan, you know Dan Norman, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm a big fan of Dan Norman. I think Dan is brilliant. I don't want to get into it, but we had a campaign at one point to get him on as many interviews. He just wasn't interested. he does his thing up in Hull. But I was on, I managed to get Dan on an interview for PT on the Net audio clinics. This is a decade ago. And he said something brilliant. One of the things that you're touching upon, there's so much great information. Thank you, by the way, is the definition of rapport that I like the most is by McDermott and O'Connor. And they say that rapport is a relationship of positive, here's the key word, responsiveness between yourself and another person. And the key word there is rapport is not about just liking someone or being in relation with them and enjoyment. It's about when you're in a state of rapport, the evidence for that is there is they are responding to you. You're responding to them. There's something that emerges from that dynamic that could not have emerged otherwise. And then it goes on to say, it's with yourself first. This is, I think what Dave Rozowski talks about, like if I'm not with me, I cannot be with you. And Dan said that one technique he utilizes, and he didn't know it was a technique until he became aware of it. And then he was able to duplicate it. When he was in person with his clients, he would show up being completely present with them. He wouldn't bring any of his energy or his stuff into the session. And he would be so with them that what he would pay attention to is when he was getting a shift in his own internal state. Like if for this one scenario, he was training this lady who he had a deep state of rapport with, and he started to feel angry. And instantly he's like, okay, I'm not hungry. There's no context for me to be angry. Wait, I'm responding to her. She's angry. She's smiling at me, but I've done something. And he was right there to check in. And I think I hear you talking about that a little bit. I think that's highly valuable.
It's interesting because it reminded me of being back at drama school. And obviously back then I wasn't doing the techniques, if you like, in order to build rapport with a client. I was doing them because if I want to be a different character, I need to understand that character. But one of the things with acting is if you see a poor actor, it's generally because they're not listening. Not because they're not delivering their lines well, because they're not.
Say that one more time. Repeat that, please.
Because they're not listening. And when you're in a scene, I've often been asked, how do you remember all your lines? And if you stop thinking about remembering your lines, but you listen to everybody else in the play, you know exactly what you need to say and what you don't need to say, because you're in response to the whole characters around you, the whole scene around you. Which kind of makes me think, you know, of NLP when you're sort of taught how to match body language but actually, if you are genuinely just interested in that person, mm-hmm. you naturally go into that, whether you've been taught it or
not. It's spontaneous. Yep. Spontaneous and organic. When you go out to a dinner party and you're truly invested in the people around you, you don't have to remember your lines.
Absolutely.
And if you do, you're going to be a shit guest at a dinner party.
One of the techniques, if you like, or games that we played in drama school, it just made me think of that, was horrible. We had to sit opposite another person, and we had to take it in turns. And the instructions were, tell the person opposite you a problem. That was it. Just tell them a problem. And as you told the person the problem, they were not allowed to respond. And then we took it in turns. Well, by the end of this, we had 30 people just emotionally a wreck, tears and everything. It was horrible.
Which one? The person discussing their problem or the person who had to listen to other people's problems?
The person that had to listen, because they felt what the other person was going through. And we, the only thing that we had to do was remain in eye contact. And for some reason, everybody chose a really big problem. They didn't choose, you know, I left the toothpaste lid off, or, you know, I stood in dog poop. It was none of that. People just came out with it. And you weren't able to do anything. And having that taken away was such an interesting experience to go through. I don't know what value that has to anybody, but you just reminded me of that. So I just thought I'd chuck that in there.
No, I got a lot out of that. Avoid people with massive problems because you'll be left in a state of complete tears.
It wasn't just a problem. It was the intensity of looking in somebody's eyes, because it's like the emotional granularity. You're fine tuning and you're opening it up to see everything. You could see them go through that trigger and that emotion, and you could see how that was making them feel.
Mm-hmm. You know, lately in the past couple of weeks, there's been so many posts about, don't come to me with your problems if you're not prepared to hear my solution, or just some bullshit like that. One of these such posts about, like, don't discuss things with other people, comes from somebody we both know. And it's interesting because there is a principle in coaching. Don't just do something, stand there. And I love that, because so often you don't have to do something.
Being what do you mean?
What do I mean? I mean, being willing to sit with somebody and just listen. The connection, the empathy, the support, the encouragement of that, the ability to allow someone to feel safe in a space of unconditional positive regard, to borrow from Carl Rogers, opens them up and leads them through their own discovery and resolution. And a lot of times we think I have to do something. Like, what are my lines? When I get in front of an audience, you know, what do I need to say? A presenter, a novice presenter before a big presentation, they're up in their hotel room going over, I'm going to make this point, that point. It's not about the points. You're not a textbook. And it's, I love that principle, which show up and be prepared to be present and listen. Don't just do something, stand there. And it's the standing there so often that makes a difference in whether or not that coaching experience is transactional or deeply transformational.
Yeah, absolutely. You reminded me again there of something else that may help people, trainers and coaches. And that's something I used to do. I don't currently do it because I'm in lockdown. I don't know if I mentioned that. It's been a year that I've been in lockdown, a week, 2 days and 59 seconds.
Yeah, I know you're not seeing this right now, but she's in like this concrete room with fluorescent lights. It's
the padded cells. It's the padding that I don't like. And the tight straps around my arms.
Well, I think you're wearing your sleeves around the back. I think you'd be more comfortable if you just wore them on the front, like most people.
Going around the tube is what I was going to say. When you're sat on the tube and just taking that moment, because you're not going anywhere, and watching people. And because they're being triggered all the time.
Because,
by different things.
Because you're not going anywhere.
Because we've got information. yeah, we've got information going on. It might be that, you know, somebody walked in and it was an unpleasant smell. It might be that it was a really lovely smell. But not you likely. See that on someone's face, you know? Yeah, normally I'm the one that just goes, oh, you smell nice. And then they think I'm weird. And I realize that that's when I should have used my inside voice. I can't help it. I always tell people when they smell nice.
Maybe you should stop chatting to the conductors.
Yeah.
Joe, okay. So as we wrap this up, if there was one piece of advice or one statement about triggers that you would want to leave for our audience, what would that be?
I think there's sort of three things that to take away is that everything starts with a trigger. That so everything starts with a trigger. Take a moment to think about how it makes you feel and be really as precise as possible to what that feeling is. So think 50 shades of that feeling, define it, and then write it down before you take the action.
Absolutely.
So everything brilliant. Starts with a trigger. How do you feel? Define it. Take a pause if that's appropriate to make the action.
Joe, love this interview. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been lovely.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Visit us at theselfhelpantidote.com to share your feedback, insights, and recommendations on what topics you'd like us to explore in the future.